So Frodo says, I wish none of this had happened. I wish none of this had come to be. And Gandalf says, we have to decide what to do with the time that is given us. I'm pretty convinced Tolkien read Esther. Because there Mordecai says to his niece, maybe, just maybe, you are here, right where you are, for such a time as this. You know, Davidson College is a small liberal arts college affiliated with the Presbyterian Church, I might tell you, just north of Charlotte, North Carolina. Those who are basketball fans probably know perhaps athletically, their most famous alumni happens to be Steph Curry, plays for the Golden State Warriors. He played for Davidson. Well, their coach, Bob McKillop, their basketball coach, Bob McKillop, this summer took the basketball team on a pilgrimage. A pilgrimage. This basketball coach, Bob McKillop, was profoundly impacted by the events that took place a year ago in Charlottesville. It changed him, he said. And he was profoundly impacted by what he saw as a rising white supremacy, or at least the permission of it, racism, hate. So he decided to take his basketball team on a pilgrimage to Auschwitz this summer. Now, I was really moved. We had a staff retreat last week, and I was really moved by Becca, our director of children and family ministries. She just asked a simple question. She said, what if parents and what if a community were as intentional and passionate about the spiritual development, the spiritual life, the spiritual heart of their children as they are passionate about their academic and athletic success? Imagine that. So Bob McKillop was passionate about the spiritual life, the heart of his basketball team. So he took him to Auschwitz, and here is why, in his words. The volatility of our world right now requires a response informed by both a respect for human dignity and an understanding of what happens when it's absent. I'm taking these young men into a moment in time when, for millions, evil seemed to have triumphed and humanity had vanished. I want these young men to understand what happened in the past, that they might become leaders the world needs for the future. Leaders who will have the courage to be advocates for and defenders of human dignity. That is why we are going. So Bob McKillop is not just training athletes, he's developing leaders. You're a leader. You know, leadership actually is defined by influence. Those who influence others are leaders. Guess what? That's all of us. We all influence. Whether we're conscious of it or not, we are always influencing those around us, either in a positive way or in a negative way. What if we understood our calling in life? What if we understood our calling in life to be a positive influence to those around us, to the world? You know, we could continue to curse the darkness, or we can get busy lighting as many candles as we possibly can. Jane Goodall wrote, she said, what you do, no matter what you do, everything you do makes a difference. You're the one that has to decide what kind of difference do you wish to make. So we're continuing our series in the summer of storytelling. We've been telling the stories of some of these characters in the Old Testament. And today's story, because we're hoping these stories are in many ways a window that allow us into the stories of our own lives. And today's story is not just about Esther. I'm actually including two women. Two. There you go. Two for the price of one. Wait. There's more. Vashti and Esther. Now, I happen to believe the story, as I read it again and kind of dived into it this week, couldn't be more timely. But I will let you connect the dots if there are dots to be connected, and I'll let you do that as you wish. But the story begins with this young girl, 13, 14, maybe 15 years old, Esther, whose real name is Hadassah. Now, Hadassah, say 14 years old, even though she was 14, she knew a lot of pain and heartache, and you could tell she knew a lot of grief in her young life because her parents died. So Hadassah was being raised in a single family by her uncle, Mordecai. Now, you need to understand that here is this young woman, 13, 14 years old, being raised in a single family in a patriarchal culture where children and youth had absolutely no worth to anybody. And women had no voice, no value. So here is this vulnerable young 13, 14-year-old girl. Hardly the material for a hero, right? Which I think to me is a great reminder that those things that we think disqualify us are often the very things that make us qualified to be heroes in the God, in the story that God is telling. So Esther, Hadassah had really no desire to be a leader. More than anything, she probably just wanted to survive. She's 13 in a culture, unless you're married, your survival rate is low. So probably the very least, she wanted to get married and maybe have a couple kids. Well, far away at the very same time is this city called Susa. And Susa is the governmental, legislative, judicial hub of the area. And in Susa, there's a party going on. Let me tell you, King Xerxes is throwing a party. And he's throwing a party for the 27 leaders of each of the provinces in his empire. And his goal was to impress them, to do whatever he could, to pull out all the stops, hold back no expenses, to impress these people, because King Xerxes had a really fragile ego. And he needed to have that ego built up. So the whole purpose of this party was to actually boost the king's ego. So there was food and drink and women and entertainment. No money was spared. And then King Xerxes also put all of his jewels on display. And then he paraded his military so that people might look at him and see his might and his strength. So there is a 7-day nonstop party. Non-stop eating, non-stop drinking, non-stop debauchery, non-stop gluttony. And there was all of these leaders in a drunken stupor. And King Xerxes, that wasn't enough. He still wanted to impress. His ego was so fragile, it still needed to be bolstered. So he had some advisors who would whisper in his ear. And these advisors said, oh, I know just the thing we need to do to impress these other people. Let's go to the queen's quarters and let's summon Queen Vashti, who is stunningly beautiful. And let's make sure that she just simply, cover kids' ears, that she just simply puts a crown on her head and nothing else, and parades in front of these drunken men. And they will be so astonished of her beauty, and they will look up to you. So they did that. They went and they summoned Queen Vashti in the queen's quarters. So if you can imagine the attendant going to summon Queen Vashti and telling her why they're summoning her, I wasn't there, but I can pretty much imagine Queen Vashti, you want me to what? I don't think so. She said, no. I ain't going. I refuse. Tell the king I am not coming. Can you imagine the courage? Again, remember the culture, remember the context. Women had no voice, women had no power, women had no influence, women had no value, except with a crown on their head and nothing else. She said no. Can you imagine the courage it took for her to do that? Can you imagine the courage it takes today? Queen Vashti said, my self-esteem, my self-worth, my dignity, it's not for sale. I am not going to let you diminish me in any way. She stood up for herself. Where might you stand up for yourself? You know, say, you know, no, I'm just not, I'm not going to allow myself to be diminished in that way. I think as a church, where are we called to stand up for those who just simply can't stand up for themselves? Where we might say, no, no, I am not going to let you rob that person of their dignity and worth. I am not going to let you treat them as less than the child of God that they are. Well, Vashti knew there would be consequences. The whispers started. And all of the other leaders that were there started to make fun of the king. He can't even control his own wife. So you can imagine the ego of this king. He was not going to have any of that. So the advisors got in his ear and they said, we need to make an example of Vashti. So they banished her. They banished her. No due process, no conversation, no trial, no nothing. Banished. She lost her crown, but never lost her dignity, never lost her self-worth. She left the comfort and the security of the palace, but she left with her soul and her integrity intact. You know, I read the story this week, and I was thinking to myself, how we just become accustomed to patriarchy and sexism, how we become accustomed to violence. How we come accustomed to just some people being seen and treated as less than other people. How we become accustomed to this widening gap between the rich and the poor. How we just simply become accustomed to a lack of moral center. Become accustomed to all the lies. Become accustomed to demonizing anyone who disagrees, who might be different than us. And we just become accustomed, and it's the way things are. What would it look like if we said, no, I ain't going to that party anymore. I refuse to participate in any activity that is going to diminish the life and the worth and the value of another human being. What would it look like if we said no? So Vashti's banished. She's gone. Party's over. People leave. Alkingo is starting to sober up. So now he's sober. Now, sober king could have realized what he did in his drunkenness and repented. He could have apologized to his wife. He could have thrown another party. And this party may be perhaps for those who are hungry. He could have actually implemented some policies that protected those who are most vulnerable and marginalized. And probably the most important thing he could have done, he could have fired his advisors and gathered him around him women who certainly would have more wisdom to share. Nah. In fact, the advisors got in his ear again and said, hey, king, your popularity is down in the tubes. Your polls are just dropping like crazy. We got to fix this problem. So what did they do? What's their solution? A beauty contest. Yeah, that's the ticket. That'll do it. A beauty contest. What we're going to do is we're going to go all through the land and gather all of the young maidens, and king, you get to pick the most beautiful one, and she will then become your next queen. So king, who had very little, had such a fragile ego, said, now this is a fantastic idea. So that's where Hadassah comes back into the story. Because the soldiers from Susa go to Hadassah's village, and they see her beauty. And they round her up with all of the other young maidens, and they begin to take her to the palace. But Mordecai knows that if he's going to intervene, he's going to be killed. But worse, Hadassah will be killed. So rather than intervening, he whispers in her ear. He gives some advice, sort of like with my kids as they left home. Always have a $10 bill underneath your foot in your shoe. Always. Mordecai says to Hadassah, don't tell them you're a Jew. They hate Jews. Hide your ethnicity. Blend in. Assimilate. It's the only way you're going to survive. You know, I've given my kids lots of advice as they've grown up. Unlike some parents, I've never had to give them advice as to what they might do to prevent themselves from being beaten and even killed because of the color of their skin, their country of origin, their legal status. Well, Hadassah blends in, assimilates. She changes her name to Esther. That's when Esther starts. She changes her name from a Jewish name to a Persian name. And guess what? She is stunningly beautiful. Esther now wins the beauty contest. She is the queen. Queen Esther. So if you can imagine where she came from to now she is in the palace with comfort and security and splendor and power and privilege that she never would have ever fathomed. I mean, she now has attendants, spa treatments. So pretty soon, Esther becomes so kind of comfortable with life in the palace, because we do become comfortable with life in the palace, she forgets about what life is like outside the palace. You know, for the 99.9% of the rest of the population. Until one day she's walking by the palace. Are you with me so far? Okay. So one day she's walking by the palace window, and she sees, oh my God, it's Uncle Mordecai. But she barely recognizes him because his hair is all kind of matted and dirty, and his clothes are torn, and he's crying. He's making some big fuss. He's making noise and crying out and trying to get attention. So Esther is like, oh my God, he's going to rock the boat. So Esther gets one of her attendants and sends clothes to Mordecai, that he might kind of make himself a little bit more respectable and to find out what the heck's going on. Why all the fuss? Well, Mordecai is out there outside the palace gates because he's trying to get Esther's attention, that she might become aware of the suffering of her people, that she might become aware that their lives, their very lives, are threatened. See, Mordecai believes that Esther's become insulated, she's become isolated, that the palace is like it's this echo chamber, that she now only hears what the powers that be want her to hear. And so Mordecai wants to get her attention. Mordecai reminds me of the courage of this 11-year-old Syrian girl who makes this video from the basement of this bombed-out building in Aleppo to let the world know what's going on. 11 years old. Have a look. She wanted to let the world know from a basement as the bombs were dropping around her. What's going on? Now me, I can't take that in. It's too much. too much. But what if that was my child? Your child. Grandchild. Or from God's perspective, in God's eyes, there's no such thing as other people's children. They're all our children. We need to look. We need to see. We need to hear. We need to be disturbed. Because that's the working of the Spirit. To be disturbed. So Mordecai wants Esther to know about the suffering of her people. Mordecai wants Esther. He's standing crying out of the palace, and he said, I'm going to keep crying until the cries are heard. He wants Esther to speak, to use her privilege and power and position to save her people. Well, Esther sends out clothes. You know, now, become more respectable. What does Mordecai do? He sends the clothes back. He sends the clothes back with a message. The message about this very powerful man named Haman. Haman has the ear of the king. And Haman, whenever Haman walks into a room, everybody has to bow. Well, one day Haman walked into a room, everybody bowed, but Mordecai. Haman hates Mordecai. And Haman now has assumed that all Jews are alike and to be despised, so they should all be killed. So Haman says to the king, I can make this financially worth your while if you annihilate all Jews. Well, the king, really? You're going to make me more wealthy? I'm in. So that's the plan. And Mordecai is desperately wanting to get Esther's attention, and he asks Esther to speak up. Esther, speak truth to power. Use your position. Use your privilege. Defend the dignity of all of us who are being oppressed. Esther, please save lives. And Esther says, who? Me? You know the law. If somebody speaks to the king without being spoken to, they're killed. You know what happened to the previous queen. I can't. Who, me? I wonder if those feel like familiar words to you. Who, me? I can't. I can't say that. I can't go there. I can't do that. I can't make a difference. I can't change things. I can't save lives. Mordecai reminds me of those words from Winston Churchill, where Winston Churchill said, there comes a time in every person's life when they're given a unique opportunity to discover the purpose for which they were born. It's their moment of destiny, and if they seize it, it becomes their finest hour. So Mordecai says to Esther, and he says to us, maybe you are right where you are for such a time as this. And Esther knows that she can't find that strength and courage on her own. So she fasts and prays for 3 days. She invites all of those around her to fast and pray for 3 days. And she rises. And she says, I will speak to the king. And if I perish, I perish. Now I'm convinced that Esther heard the whispers in the palace of the attendants, as they remember the courage of Vashti. And she found that courage herself. You know, it's interesting to me, Esther, 13, 14, 15 years old, a young girl, somehow finds the courage to save a whole generation of people. That was the plan. The entire Jewish population was to be annihilated. And Esther, 13 years old, her courage saved their lives. Well, if the whole Jewish population be annihilated, there's no Joseph. There's no Mary. There's no Jesus. So who did God choose to make sure that this great love story of redeeming, restoring, and healing the world with love would continue? Who did God choose? An orphan girl. You know, I would love to go talk to this Davidson basketball team. I would love to know how their experience in Auschwitz shaped them as leaders. How are you being called to lead, to influence, to save? Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, we don't need leaders in love of money. We need leaders in love of justice. We don't need leaders in love of publicity. We need leaders in love with humanity. We don't need leaders in love with themselves. We need leaders in love with the fact and the idea and the possibility of their lives to be used for a purpose greater than themselves. We don't need leaders who insist on being right. We need leaders who might have the courage to do what's right. We don't need leaders in love with power. We need leaders who understand the power of love. We need leaders who understand that maybe they are here now, this time, this place, for such a time as this. We need you and know who me here. You are the leaders. The world is waiting for. May God grace us with the strength and courage to boldly love. We continue to worship God as the morning offering is received.